content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Over the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the New York Times and National Geographic Traveler. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in these articles we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Now, if you've been following international news lately, you're likely aware of the massive fires underway in Australia. New York Times reporter Tariro Mezazawa writes that a devastating fire season is creating uncertainty among travelers. Experts recommend getting travel insurance, checking on airline and hotel cancellation policies, and knowing exactly what areas are affected. The article, What You Need to Know About Traveling to Australia During This Fire Season, appeared in the January 6th issue of the New York Times and was updated online on January 12th. So please keep that in mind as we read these articles so you have a proper date perspective. As one of the worst fire seasons in Australia's history continues to engulf parts of the country, authorities asked thousands of residents and tourists to evacuate affected areas, and the government announced the large-scale use of military assets to try and tame the fires, leaving some people stranded and those with upcoming trips to the country unsure of whether to visit or not. Currently, fires are largely burning across the states of Victoria, where Melbourne is, New South Wales, where Sydney is, and South Australia, where Adelaide is. Military ships and aircraft have been deployed to deliver water, food, and fuel to towns cut off by the fires, as well as to rescue those who are stranded. The Australian writer Richard Flanagan wrote last week that the amount of lands the fires have burned is almost as large as West Virginia, more than triple the area destroyed by the 2018 fires in California, and six times the size of the 2019 fires in Amazonia. Now, here's what we know about the fires and how they could affect upcoming trips to parts of Australia, and each of these segments begins with a question. Where exactly are the fires and how bad are they? Well, since September, the fires have burned millions of acres across the country. The state of New South Wales has been the most affected. There have also been blazing fires in the state of Victoria. So far, at least 23 people have died, more than 1,500 homes destroyed, and millions of animals killed. Both Victoria and New South Wales declared a state of emergency, and again, that was the week of January 12th. And on Friday of that week, officials said that conditions will worsen over the weekend and pleaded with people to evacuate. If you are holidaying on the south coast, particularly in the general area from Batemans Bay to the Victorian border, you need to leave before Saturday. That was from the New South Wales Rural Fire Service. Now, the South Australian County Fire Service advised anyone traveling to Kangaroo Island, which lies off the coast of Australia, and where there have been extensive fires, to check with their accommodation or travel providers. The island is a popular destination for Australian and foreign tourists alike. What's causing the fires? The fires and conditions causing them, including heat and drought, aren't new to Australians, but this season's extreme highs are. High temperatures and strong winds combined with the long drought and low moisture in the soil have kept fires blazing. Australia had its hottest day on record with average highs of 107.4 degrees Fahrenheit or 41.9 degrees Celsius in December. The extreme heat came after the driest spring on record. In November, the state issued a catastrophic fire danger rating for the first time in the decade that the current warning system has been in place. Former New South Wales Fire and Rescue Chief Greg Mullen said that beginning in April, he and 22 other former fire and rescue workers tried to warn Prime Minister Scott Morrison that this fire season would be an especially difficult one and it would be wise to get more water bombers. The fire chiefs were not able to get a meeting with the Prime Minister, Mr. Mullen said. Last week, angry residents at the Bega Valley Township of Cobargo confronted Mr. Morrison when he visited. Again, that's the week of July 12th. Are major cities, including Sydney and Melbourne, safe from fires? Although the fires haven't ravaged Sydney or Melbourne and have mostly been in rural areas, smoke and ash have reached coastal suburbs more than 50 miles away, causing the air quality to severely decline. The bushfires have created toxic pollution and choking smoke, causing the air quality index in Victoria to rise more than 999, the worst in the world. And this past Thursday, air quality index is over 200, considered hazardous to health. In Sydney, heavy smoke has discolored the sky on many days, and air quality there has at times been among the worst in the world. In Canberra, the nation's capital, the air quality rating was over 340, leading some businesses to remain closed on Monday, and that was been over a week ago. Beijing's rating was 170. The Australian Medical Association warned people who are sensitive to smoke and those with pre-existing heart and lung conditions to take extra care during the fires. In Melbourne, people rushed to buy P2 and N95 smoke masks. People traveling to Australia should consider bringing their own. Now, what should I do if I'm planning to visit one of the affected areas in the next weeks? Well, U.S. Embassy officials said that tourists on the south coast of New South Wales should leave because of extreme fire danger, and that came about a week ago. Whilst bushfires continue to impact parts of Australia, many areas are unaffected, and most tourism businesses are still open, said Philippa Harrison. She's the managing director of Tourism Australia, the country's tourism agency. It's more important than ever that we rally around our communities and the tourism sector who may have been impacted, she says. It is worth remembering that Australia is a large country with many parts that are unaffected by the current wildfires. Even in New South Wales and Victoria, for many people, it's still business as usual, with the fires happening far away. People don't have to cancel trips entirely, and those who are already there don't have to leave the country. There are currently no fires in the Northern Territory, where Uluru is, but there are some fires in Tasmania and in Western Australia, where Perth is, but all three areas are still considered largely safe. If I want to cancel my trip, will airlines and cruise companies give me a refund? Well, if you are traveling to an area affected by the fires, you will likely be able to get a refund or have the option of rescheduling. However, if you are hoping to cancel a trip to a part of the country where there are no fires or where evacuations haven't been announced, then it's best to call your airline and talk to a representative. Airlines, including Qantas, Virgin Australia, Air New Zealand, and Hawaiian Airlines, are keeping a close eye on the fires, they said, but for now, flights are running as usual. We are monitoring the situation closely and will continue to address traveler concerns on a case-by-case basis, a media representative for Hawaii Airlines wrote in an email. Virgin Airlines is waiving the change fee for any guest who need to change flights because they are affected by the fire. The airline is also offering, as an alternative, a travel bank credit. Now, cruise companies are still operating in Australia, but a handful of ships, including Princess Cruises, Golden Princess, Oceania Cruises, and Cruise and Maritime Voyages, have adjusted their itineraries to bypass Eden and Kangaroo Island. Travelers who wish to cancel upcoming trips should reach out to their cruise company directly. Does insurance cover bushfires? Not all insurance plans cover natural disasters, so it is important to read your fine print. If travelers do have a cancellation policy in place, their trip must still be reasonably impacted by the fires in order to cancel and be reimbursed for their trip, said Megan Moncrief, chief marketing officer of Squaremouth.com. It's a travel insurance comparison site. This includes their destination being uninhabitable under a mandatory evacuation, or they are prevented from reaching their destination entirely, she says. For those who already have trips booked but don't have insurance, if the time allows, get cancel for any reason insurance. Now, these plans allow travelers to cancel a trip for any reason, including just not wanting to go anymore. These policies cost 40% more than a standard trip cancellation policy and only reimburse up to 75% of the trip cost, Ms. Moncrief said. They also must be purchased within 21 days of the first payment toward the ship, or trip, rather, I should say, which likely means it isn't an option for already planned trips. Well, how do I stay updated? Well, for people already in Australia and looking to stay informed, keep a radio around. Australia's national broadcaster, ABC, which stands for Australian Broadcasting Company, not any connection with America's ABC, they keep offering regular updates on that service. And the Fires Near Me app, again, that's an app called the Fires Near Me, developed by New South Wales Fire Service, is also popular among Australians. And you can put that on your phone. Official maps, evacuation orders, and other updates can be found on ACT Emergency Services Agency, also Emergency WA. New South Wales Rural Fire Service, Northern Territory Fire and Rescue Service, Queensland Rural Fire Service, South Australian Country Fire Service, Tasmania Fire Service, and Vic Emergency. And you can Google any of those to get some of those updates. So if you're interested in what's going on in Australia. Now, traveling to Australia links closely to the next part of our eight-part series, Best of the World, 25 Trips to Take in 2020. It's from the December 2019, January 2020 issue of National Geographic Traveler. Our destination today is Tasmania, an island state of Australia that lies south of the mainland and is separated by the seas of the Bass Strait. Now, writer and guide is Sarah Reed, who makes her home in Melbourne, Australia, and that's in Victoria Province, one of those areas affected by the fires. She may have heard in our New York Times article some fires have already erupted in Tasmania, but none to the degree seen throughout southeastern Australia. Tasmania, by the way, is the 26th largest island in the world with a population of more than 533,000. Now, that includes 334 surrounding islands and encompasses more than 35,000 square miles. So, why don't we join Sarah Reed and let's learn a little more about this Australian state called Tasmania. Explore the possibilities, reads the license plate of my rental car, complete with a Tasmanian tiger peeking out from between two numbers. Challenge accepted, I think, tossing my hiking boots in the trunk and setting the GPS to the nearest national park. Once mocked as a backwater, Tasmania is now one of Australia's fastest-growing tourism destinations. Key to the appeal of Australia's southernmost state is its raw natural beauty, which owes largely to a combination of remoteness, airport expansion plans are underway, but international flights are still a few years off, and the enduring green spirit of its half-million or so residents. Swathed in 2,000-year-old trees and home to real-life devils and even tigers, if you believe the rumors that the officially extinct thylacine lives on, it's the stuff outdoor adventures are made of. Now, after making the trek here, visitors find that most of Tassie's attractions are surprisingly accessible. Let me take a quick moment to remind you that Tassie is the nickname given for the Australian state of Tasmania, and you'll hear it throughout the article. It takes just 4 hours to drive the length of Tassie. No matter where you base yourself, opportunities to become immersed in nature are never far away. Nearly half the state is designated national park, after all. Curious to discover if Tassie's newest adventure experiences are as spectacular as they appear on my social media feeds, I headed to Hobart, which happens to be the capital, to explore the adrenalized enticements within Cooee, within reach of the capital. Hiker's heaven. Bit cuter than the tiger snake, isn't it? Guide Joel Kovacs jokes as a pademelon, like a mini kangaroo, hops across our path along the Three Capes track, pausing a few feet away to peer at us through a hedge of cutting grass once used by the Palawa, Aboriginal people of Tasmania, for basket weaving. Along with the trio of Bennett's wallabies and the deadly tiger snake that had joined us on the track, not to mention the echidna we spot later that day, it's been a wildlife-watching boon. But the views remain the highlight of this four-day, 30-mile trail skirting the soaring Dolerite cliffs that prop up the Tasman Peninsula, a windswept wilderness jutting off the state's southeastern tip. Unveiled in 2015 to tremendous expectations, Tasmania's newest multi-day trail comes complete with architect-designed bunkhouses and a smattering of story seats inviting walkers to contemplate the history of the peninsula while taking a breather. Last year, Tasmanian Walking Company, which runs Lux guided hikes on some of Tassie's top trails, launched the Three Capes Lodge Walk with groups overnighting at private eco-sensitive cliffside lodges discreetly tucked off the main trail. Considering the gourmet meals, the local wine I don't have to carry myself, and the two guides' knowledge, it's a truly transformative way to experience the trail, which is unlike any other in Tassie. But the 880-odd tracks that lace the state's national parks, reserves, and conservation areas each have their own unique aspects, and variety isn't the only selling point. Even the trails with the best infrastructure don't detract from the feeling of being immersed in the wilderness, says Kovacs, a Hobart native who has tramped many of them in his decade of guiding. Tassie's trails haven't been widened like you'll see in New Zealand and elsewhere to accommodate big crowds, and I hope they'll stay that way. Kovac's favorite is the Overland Track, the six-day traverse of Cradle Mountain, Lake St. Clair National Park. High on my own wish list is the Wukalina Walk, a four-day Aboriginal guided trek launched last year in the Bay of Fires, so-called partly for its orange lichen-covered granite boulders. More casual walkers find a diversity of day hikes to choose from. I squeeze in a quick jaunt to Russell Falls and Horseshoe Falls upstream in Mount Field National Park, which tumbles to a rainforest setting immortalized on Tasmania's first stamp collection designed to promote tourism in 1899. Other notable strolls include the Dove Lake Circuit beneath the towering spires of Cradle Mountain, Wineglass Bay Lookout for Frey Sennett National Park's best view, and the Spring Long for its wildlife. And that's Spring Long Nature Walk in Narawantapu National Park, North Coast. And there are just three of 60 short walks listed by the Parks and Wildlife Service as the state's best, and big developments are on the way. Proposal to build six eco-sensitive hikers' huts along the South Coast Track, Tasmania's most remote trail, was greenlighted last year. Well, this past July, I saw the announcement of plans to develop a walking route in the Tyndall Range of the edge of Tasmanian Wilderness World Heritage Area. Bold bike trails. Peering over my handlebars at the steep, rocky, single track jagging down between snow gum trees, I wonder if I've overestimated my ability. But after navigating a few tight corners without falling off, I settled into the ride down Medina Bike Park, allowing myself to steal longer glimpses of the ever-changing landscape as we descend more than 2,600 feet through a web of 62 trails and counting, threading down a hillside northwest of Hobart. I like to think of this section as our own Jurassic Park, Assistant Manager Luke Reed tells me, as we weave between lofty king ferns and the temperate rainforest that hugs the slopes. Since decamping from the mainland 2 years ago, when he got wind of the Medina development, Reed says he hasn't looked back. There's just so much to do here, he says. We've got Marriott's Falls and Mount Field just down the road, and I still haven't ridden all the trails in Medina. While Medina is Tasmania's only all-downhill bike park, it's just one of a growing number of top mountain bike parks popping up around the state. Just north of Launceston, Hollybank Mountain Bike Park opened in 2014 with a six-mile descent called the Juggernaut that draws riders from all over the world. The following year, the former Tim Manning town of Derby transformed into Australia's premier mountain biking destination overnight following the opening of Blue Derby Mountain Bike Trails. And the scene continues to evolve with the first section of the St. Helens Mountain Bike Trail Network, 40 miles southeast of Derby, having opened in November. You can even ride some of the Mount Wellington trails, says Reed, as we peel off our helmets, relieved to have completed a lap of Medina without having to test the limits of my travel insurance. I take his word for it. Well, coastal tours by kayak. My guide, Liam Weaver, sees it first. Following his lead, I kayak slowly toward the small brown lump moving across the water. Suddenly, it stops, its slick, furry body and iconic duck bill more visible as it pauses on the surface for a few seconds before diving under the tannin-stained water. It's my first wild platypus sighting, and I'm rapt. On some trips, we spot more than 20, says Weaver, grinning back at me, and I snap back to scanning the river for more platypus activity. One of Australia's most elusive creatures, these shy monotremes, egg-laying mammals, thrive in the upper Derwent River, which snakes down a rural valley northwest of Hobart, lined with sheep farms and hop plantations that scent the air with an odd mix of lanolin and beer. Weaver estimates 30 to 50 breeding pairs of platypuses make their homes here, setting the scene for Tassie Bound's flagship kayaking tour. When Liam first took me down here on kayak, it felt like we were being gifted an opportunity to create a unique, sustainable tourism experience, Liam's wife and business partner, Fiona, tells me after the tour. She also runs Wild Island Women, Tasmania's first female adventure community. Even some locals are unaware that we have this incredible wildlife spotting opportunity on our doorsteps, she says. Even if you don't see any platypuses, it's a ridiculously scenic afternoon paddle downriver. 3 years since launching the tour, Tassie Bound remains the only operator on the river, which adds to the sense of adventure. The couple also run various other kayaking tours, and there's some beautiful kayaking to be had around the Freycinet Peninsula. Though keen paddlers in search of the ultimate off-grid adventure, would be wise to check out Roaring Forties kayaking multi-day expeditions in the rugged, hidden waterways of the Tasmanian Wilderness World Heritage Area. Operating in the same region is Australia's most spectacular whitewater rafting experience, an 8-day adventure down the Franklin River, which was saved from a dam project in the 70s, thanks to one of the most significant environmental campaigns in Australia's history. The experience of paddling down the untamed wilderness of the Franklin, which has no man-made infrastructure whatsoever, is incredibly powerful, says Tassie-born Elias Eichler, who runs Franklin River Rafting with his wife and fellow rafting guide, Franzie. The water is so pure, we have a cup hanging off the side of the boat. You can just dunk in the river if you get thirsty. Where else can you do that these days, she says. Movable feast. From King Island dairy cheeses to Bruny Island oysters, Tasmania's edible output is legendary, and with more than a half dozen established food and drink trails across the state, choosing your own culinary itinerary is one of Tassie's most rewarding soft adventures. Given its ideal climate for malting, Tassie's Whiskey Trail is a good place to start. Following a suitably weird morning at the Museum of Old and New Art, that's called Mona in Australia, M-O-N-A, Tassie's flagship cultural institution and an adventure in itself, I drop into the Shine Estate, just a 30-minute drive north of Hobart. The Kernick family has painstakingly restored an exquisite 19th-century Gothic Revival sandstone stables and barn, the latter now acting as a tasting room of the family distillery, the first release of their triple-distilled Mackie whiskey won the gold medal at the 2018 San Francisco World Spirits Competition. But I'm partial to their Poltergeist Gin. I wonder which sounds louder, the drinker or the drink? Well, anyway, it was named in honor of the pagan witch protection symbols etched into the building during the colonial times, though Anne Kirk, who runs tours and tasting by appointment, hints there's more to the story. She once experienced the sensation of someone sitting on her bed when she was in it, and nobody else was around. We love a property with spirits, so we thought we had better make some, she winks as she pours me a gin and tonic. Other paths reveal the spectrum of Tasmania's taste. Enophiles, follow the blue and yellow signs along the 105-mile loop north from Launceston to discover more than 30 cellar doors on the Tamar Valley wine route. The made-on-Bruny Island gourmet trail is ideal for oyster and cheese lovers. While tucking into a perfectly battered fillet of trevally from one of Hobart's famous floating fish and chip shops, I think that if there's a downside to seeking adventure in Tasmania, it's that no matter how hard you throw yourself into it, you'll be lucky to go home any lighter. Taking another bite, I figure I can live with that. Sarah Reed having a lot of fun there, right, in Tasmania. And if you'd like to consider a trip there, Sarah has some tips in her accompanying sidebar, the TravelWise Hobart region, starting with when to go, what to know. Tasmania is a year-round destination, though many tour providers cease operations during the winter months. That's late May to early September. Hikers should be prepared for freezing temperatures and snow on higher altitude trails during this time. Now, how about where to sleep? Well, you have the MAC Q01. That's MAC Q01. There's no better way to get acquainted with Hobart than on a complimentary tour led by this luxury harborside hotel's master storyteller, Justin Johnstone. Each enormous guest room, some with water views, is named for a colorful Tassie character. And yes, that's a giant Russian cave bear fossil in the Evolve Bar. And you can check all that out online at macq01.com.au. M-A-C-Q, the number zero, the number one, .com.au. And then we have the Moss Hotel, furnished in rainforest tones and with a vertical garden of Mount Wellington ferns spilling down the lobby wall. Hobart's newest boutique hotel is the perfect primer for a Tassie wilderness adventure. Lodging spread across two heritage buildings on the same street as the popular Salamanca Saturday Market. Check it all out at mosshotel.com.au. That's Moss, M-O-S-S, mosshotel.com.au. Then we have the Islington Hotel, with its acclaimed contemporary restaurant showcasing local produce, well-stocked Honor Bar, Mount Wellington views, and an ample off-street parking. This 11-room boutique hotel, set in a quirky South Hobart heritage home, is a good choice for self-drivers keen to avoid the downtown bustle. And you can get more information at islingtonhotel.com, I-S-L-I-N-G-T-O-N, islingtonhotel.com. Now, places to eat. We have the Templo, that's T-E-M-P-L-O. Hobart excels at Italian, but while Eddie's and FICO won't disappoint, that's E-T-I-E-S, Eddie's, I should say probably, and FICO, F-I-C-O. This cozy 20-seater, referring to the Templo on the fringe of the Central Business District, edges them out for inventive and reasonably priced degustation menu. There's also a short blackboard menu of main-sized dishes. You can learn more at Templo, T-E-M-P-L-O, templo.com.au. Then we have the Agrarian Kitchen. Now, set in Australia's oldest former psychiatric hospital, something about that, this destination restaurant in New Norfolk, 45 minutes and drive north of Hobart, is a creative yet unfussy farm-to-table dining at its finest. And you can save room for the quince pavlova. And this is called the Agrarian Kitchen, and theagrariankitchen.com. Get you more information online. And then we have the Cibo Avino. Open in early 2019, this tiny cafe is the place to brunch in Battery Point. Try the Parmesan and herb scrambled eggs with pesto, wilted spinach, kale, and dukkah. That's a nut and spice mix, spelled D-U-K-K-A-H. And though if you need to sleep in, the lunch menu also holds its own. Get more at ciboevinotas.com, C-I-B-O-E-V-I-N-O-T-A-S, ciboevinotas.com. And by the way, Nat Geo points out that the National Geographic Expeditions, that's their tour service, offers a 12-day Australia-Tasmania in the Great Barrier Reef itinerary. That includes visits to Hobart, Mount Field National Park, and Cradle Mountain Lake, St. Clair National Park. And you can learn more all about that at natgeoexpeditions.com/explore. That's natgeoexpeditions.com/explore. Wow. Lots of things there in Australia. Let's hope those fires diminish and go away, because there's some beautiful country out there, right? Well, next week, we're going to continue our eight-part series, Best of the World, 25 Trips to Take in 2020. And we're going to be taking some snapshot tours over the next two episodes of some unique locations. Hope you'll be joining us for that. And real quickly, with just a few minutes we have, actually less than a couple of minutes left here, to kind of check out our Carolina Road Trip Planner from the winter edition of the AAA Go magazine. We have in Wilmington on January 20th, Dr. Martin Luther King Day Jr. Day Parade and Commemoration. You can celebrate the holiday in historic downtown Wilmington with a parade. Additional programs are going to be held throughout the weekend. All of it is free. You can check all that out at wilmingtonandbeaches.com. January 24th, Fayetteville's holding its parking lot party. That sounds interesting. Stroll along Hay Street, Maxwell Street, and the Arts Council parking lot to see local artisans creating and performing. Again, it's all free, and you can check that one out at theartscouncil.com. More information at theartscouncil.com for the parking lot party in Fayetteville. And that concludes our time for today's episode of Armchair Traveler. Hope you'll be listening, that you've enjoyed it. I'm Mike Edwards with the North Carolina Reading Service, and the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. By the way, the broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.